This is the Amateur Skeptics Podcast number 318. I'm your host, Brian. Joining this evening is Mad Cat.
Hello, hello. How are we today?
Doing okay. And of course, the dumbass himself.
I don't want anybody else, podcast audience. When I think about you, I touch the power button on my microphone so I can record for you.
That's intimate. Intimate. Yeah. Wow.
That's very intimate.
Yeah, that's impressive. Everybody doing well this week?
My finger is healing.
That's good. The pictures of that were not great.
No, they weren't. It's smaller, shorter, but it's healing.
Good. Dumbass, you healing okay?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, but I've got the section.
Oh, sexual healing.
That's right.
Okay, well, do we got anything else, or should we just dive right in?
Let's dive.
All right.
Winning.
So, what time is it?
Well, it would happen to be Dumbass's Masturbation Moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire.
The Amateur Skeptics present Ian's Masturbation Moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire. The Dumbass Media Empire, bringing you content that touches people while they touch themselves.
Very important to us.
No, I am the brick. I am the glue holding us all together.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We all follow your ass.
Heyo.
That does not. What you got, cuz?
I'm getting a colonoscopy on Wednesday. It's talking about, following asses. That's completely.
Really?
Yeah, that's a complete side note there. You know, but since we were talking about following asses, I'm getting mine probed.
I'm not going to talk to my doctor about stuff like that because they'll want to check.
Ryan, I'm sure it'll all work out in the end.
You know, I hope you're right.
Wow,
got me. You know, when a joke hits you just a little late.
Mm-hmm. That's me all the time.
That's you all the time. One step behind.
Yeah,
huh?
I know. Don't worry if you're a little behind.
Yeah, you don't want to be behind that joke. I'll tell you what. Large study unpacks the complicated nature of problematic masturbation. This is going to dive into some stuff that I have questions about. But let's get started.
Right. Yes, because this is along the same kind of road as that what we've been talking about. All the studies that show that masturbation addiction is really a thing. Of course, part of that is, of course, that people can have trouble and distress from their own masturbation habits. That has never been denied. But this research kind of delves deeper into that and, you know, what makes up the feeling of distress and what might constitute problematic masturbation.
So, I mean, it's going to hinge on what they are considering problematic. One thing I would say, I mean, if somebody were to come to me and say, hey, you're always covering all these good things about sex and masturbation. What about you? Why aren't you covering all the studies that say is bad? And I would have to say, that's a fair point, right? Are we just so biased that we're missing some studies out there that we should be covering that are pointing towards masturbation actually being a problem?
There are studies out there that have argued that masturbation can be a problem, and this article mentions them. The specific study we're talking about here does not classify masturbation habits as problematic. It's
right.
A survey about people and how they feel about their masturbation habits. It's a Finnish study of 12,271 Finnish twins, their siblings, aged 18 to 49 years.
So, but they weren't all twins, were they? I mean, what does that mean? What's the total number? Is it the 12,000 that includes siblings?
I think 12,000 is the full number, and that includes the pairs of siblings.
Okay.
Survey says.
And I guess I wonder why that's relevant. That it's siblings and twins. Were they able to do something with that data?
I'm not entirely sure why they use twins and why that's mentioned. Maybe in order to try to account for genetic factors.
Sure. I mean, but I read the rest of the article, and it doesn't even get to that, does it?
No, it really doesn't. It lists a lot of numbers and stuff about what people found out. It is, of course, a survey, so, like, you got to take that with a grain of salt, how comfortable we're answering certain questions and everything. Like, for example, of course, They say that men on average masturbated approximately 3.18 times per week, while women reported an average frequency of 1.62 times. And the difference was statistically significant, but of course, could the women be underreporting, and could the men possibly be over?
I mean, 3 times a week doesn't sound like a lot to me.
No, it doesn't sound like a whole lot. Mm. It's possible that men overreport being more want to look like they're more virile or something. I don't know if men tend to under or overreport their masturbation habits.
I think a lot of studies that we've read and some of the propaganda you see online, I think that some of these guys overreport. I don't know. It just seems to me that three doesn't seem like a lot. But remember, this is an average, and you could have some people that weren't masturbating at all that, you know, that bring that number down,
right?
So you don't. So it's hard to say what I would, how they did that average. What I would want to see is a mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see where, you know, you look at how many times people are say they're masturbating per week, and what's the mean average as opposed to an overall average with in the mode and the there's three
right.
different types, right, of average, and a mean would be like, you know, wherever most people ended up, you know, I don't know. I think that might be more meaningful than piling them all together and then dividing them.
Well, the interesting thing I think that this study did was, you know, it asked them not just for their frequency of masturbation, but like how often they thought they should be masturbating, and how much distress that is causing them. So basically measuring if they think they overindulge in the pleasure and they wish they could cut back, they feel that it is causing them some level of distress in some factor, possibly religious or just, you know, kind of a societal thing.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting. I like that question, and I like the way that it's posed, because to me, you know, it's just asking, you know, how much do you masturbate, and how do you feel about that? Is it, you know, how is the question teased out would be important, but I think that's better than, you know, than straight up saying, does this cause you psychological distress, right?
Right, and of course, women who masturbated more or less than desired tended to report higher levels of sexual stress. So that means people can think they under-masturbate too. Maybe, I guess in those cases, it would be like, I don't get the time to do it enough, and I wish I had more time to just, like, focus on that.
Maybe. I mean, it could go either way, I suppose. Yeah. I always feel like women's masturbation, and one of the reasons that this segment got started, I think, was because Terry was specifically interested in endorsing. And because there is a lot of stigma attached.
I also endorse women's masturbation.
Yeah. it's because of the issue of stigma attached to it. And there may be more stigma about women's masturbation than men's. We talk about men's masturbation a lot, but there's more stigma about women masturbating and even talking.
Right. I think no matter what, we see it as more titillating, whereas men's masturbation, I think, is just seen as more off-putting in general, I guess, probably because society is run by men.
Well, because somebody's just rubbing a stick, and it's, you know, and that's kind of boring, right? It's much more entertaining, I think, to watch a woman. Is that what they're talking about?
some porn out there, like women with sticks.
Oh, well, there's a lot of that going on, right?
Very erotic.
Yeah. Chicks with dicks. Yeah. Definitely a thing.
Yes, that is internet.
So I guess, I mean, okay, so ultimately, what was their ultimate conclusion? Specifically, they were looking for the impact on higher levels of masturbation and how that affects, you know, people's outlook on their
right.
Masturbation.
I mean, I think the main takeaway of it, I think that we're supposed to get is that the amount you masturbate doesn't really have as much an impact as your thoughts about how much you should masturbate, because like frequency of masturbation had like pretty much no effect on the overall satisfaction people had with their masturbation habits. It was like how much they thought they should be masturbating that really, you know, led to this kind of distress over, you know, like how things should be.
And this is, it says here, in particular, 6.3% of men and 2.1% of women who masturbated less frequently than the average still regarded their masturbation as problematic. But what I don't see here is what was the overall people who in the study who felt that their masturbation was problematic? Because if you didn't think it was problematic, you know, it doesn't help the statistic, right, that they were trying to build, what they were looking for. Because if you're comfortable with your with the amount you're masturbating, they don't even broach that here. Well, do they? Did I miss it?
There's a link to the study here.
Yeah. You can go, yeah. Okay. That, which is always great. I mean, I like public open science like that. Because I did read that one that I went through last week, right? I went through that whole study. And this is the same site as IU, right? So this Springer link.
So 8.3% of men reported masturbating more than desired and also experiencing sexual stress. And that applied to 2.7% of women.
So that's, I mean, that's low. That's just, I mean, that's not, yeah. I mean, that's not, and that, I mean, this, certainly the study is, they have something key that they're looking for. But overall, I mean,
yeah.
You wish that 8.3%
not many people are experiencing stress.
So over. So it's not a high number that are necessarily experiencing that are having this issue.
No, sorry.
So and for different reasons, as you're reading through this abstract, there's different reasons that they felt that way. So 2% because they either masturbated more or more than they thought they should. So there's a lot of other reasons for distress, and it didn't specifically ask about religion, but I mean, which is, I guess, fair, but I mean, some of the demographic information, maybe they did ask that, but they didn't really cover it in the...
Right. But I think the main takeaway is that your satisfaction with your sex life and how often you masturbate is a lot more based on just your feelings on how it should be, which instead of like looking at the way things are and trying to accommodate that, you know, people wishing they were different and they had a different sex drive maybe, because of societal expectation, which is that's the thing that I think this shows that leads this kind of stress and considering themselves to have a masturbation problem.
Right. And this study, I think, is a correlative study, and it really isn't a causative study, right? They were just they're making some correlations here. And
no, that's true.
But in the end, they admit that, you know, that that's a weakness of this study and that somebody should try to do a causational study, right? They should, and they say that, and they also talk about how, and one of the things that we always bring up, especially with this kind of research, is that these are survey, and surveys have a degree of problem. And,
right,
but they're
and it's also
very
based
about
on
it.
A Finnish population.
Right.
And, you know, like all... of its time, you know, who knows how it would be.
This was like, it was...
Is it 26?
20, well, this is the... Your article is from October 14, 2023, but I don't know about when the actual study was done.
Separate data collections from 2005 and 2006.
Published in June 2023. And,
so like,
and
it's, yeah, this data is already almost a couple decades by the time this is being published.
Well, no,
so,
no,
like,
no.
Who
no.
knows how it,
2023, where this year. It was published this year.
Yeah. But the data was collected in like 2005.
Oh, right. I see what you're saying. Yeah, these things take time, right? Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, yeah. The data is old. That's fair.
So like societal ideas about masturbation could have changed in intervening time as well.
Absolutely. Yep.
Very true.
And unfortunately, it's not an open study. They want $40 for it to buy the PDF.
I hate it when they do that.
Well, I understand it. I mean, this stuff isn't free to do, but I mean, it is unfortunate, you know, if you really want to dive into it. But I don't have the expertise, so they're not getting my $40. But yeah, I thought it's interesting, and it seemed to me pretty balanced research, and they admitted that where the study was.
Mm-hmm. They did to over 12,000 people, so like that's a good number.
Yep, that's great. That's better than these small studies we see, but you know, from some religious group that say, "See, sexual, you know, we did it. We did 10 people and found that all 10 of them were addicted to porn."
Right. I mean, often those kinds of studies too. They do like studies where they're basically studying people who have already come in to like some sort of therapy thing for porn addiction, and so like already have like idea of what their addiction is and everything. It's good for like looking at people who already have this thing, but you know, like they often make it as like is like representative of like the people in general, that people are like porn is going to cause you to become a masturbation addict, pretty much unavoidable kind of deal.
Yeah. Yep, that's how it's used. What else you got here? What's the next thing you got? Top 10 songs to masturbate to.
That's right. Let's look at songs that celebrate masturbation.
Oh, yeah. So it's pop songs about masturbation. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe for the recording, you can just play a Bleach one.
Okay. So we can try that. We can try that.
Maybe. I don't know. If you can do that. If it's not too much work.
Let's see what happens. Should we
you
click
just
on...
Just out talk when... if.
Yeah, well I'll have to listen and see because I don't want to just click on the links and play that. Oh, you want to get the specific piece where they're... Yeah. Oh, Shebop. Yeah, from Lynch City Lopper. Okay, Shebop to Whip. As a kid, I wouldn't have recognized that as a masturbation song, but now I get it.
You know, I remember hearing that as a kid. It wasn't like one of my favorite songs or anything, but like I only as an adult that it was about masturbation.
And how do you feel about it now? Is it now one of your favorite songs?
Now I appreciate it a lot more on that level, and it's interesting because according to this...
It says on the Cyndi Lauper song
right.
that radio stations refused to play it.
That's right. And I'll that say more about that later because I thought I was reading more about that.
That means
but
it
anyway,
hit
yeah,
it
the radio stations, I was reading it from another source, but as I remember, like she kind of like was keeping it a secret that, did it mention it above here?
The song was incredibly...
Right, yes, they did mention it above, okay.
Oh, what did
so
they
she
mention?
She said that most people didn't get what Shebop was about until much later when she went on Dr. Ruth's radio show. And she kind of let it slip, and she was mad at herself for that. But I was wondering if music video for Shebop had come out by that point, because she does make it kind of obvious. Like, she has a point in the video where she's doing Master Bingo, which, you know, isn't very far. It isn't a very hidden analogy, if you ask me, but I don't know. I guess people just... didn't pay attention that much until she let it out on Dr. Ruth's show.
And they're like, what?
Yeah, it says that the song was incredibly incendiary at the time for that reason. So I had to read the whole thing. Took that out of... Anyway, yeah, radio stations, started refusing to play it. I'll fix it in post, of course. Women enjoy pleasure with something they didn't talk about openly. And if they did, they were shamed for it. This song was incredibly incendiary at the time for that reason. Radio stations refused to play it, and that was good. That means it hit a nerve.
That's right.
I like that.
I like that, too. I like that she was, like, pretty much open out there about female masturbation, and the song was all about that. That's all it was. She Bop. It's the name of the song.
Yep. But everyone looked at...
Isn't bop an old term for having sex? Was it bop?
Bop.
Yeah, I guess
because in
well,
the song,
once you know
if the houses are rocking, don't
Shebop
come a knocking.
Is obvious.
Yeah, but
I think that if you don't know, then it's not obvious that Shebop would be about Matt.
There's a line: if the house is a rocking, oh my baby, she likes the ball. That's what it is. She likes the ball. So that's right. That's for having sex. Never mind. Bowling was you know those people.
Well, the lyrics are: they say I better stop or I'll go blind. So.
Nice.
I mean, that makes it pretty obviously about masturbation.
Yep.
All right. What's the next one? Let's go through these.
The next one, of course, is a classic one. Not quite as hidden as Cyndi Lauper's song, the Divinal I Touch My.
Yeah. When I think about I touch my.
Oh, yes.
That's the one. Yeah.
It's 1990. Okay. People were starting to talk a lot more about sex and masturbation and stuff.
Okay. Lady Gaga, Dancing in a Circle. Oh, were you more to say on that one?
Nope. Okay. Let's move on.
Let's move on.
Lady Gaga.
Yeah, Dance in a Circle. I don't know that I've heard this. If I've heard it, I didn't recognize it, but okay.
Right. I'm not sure. She mentions, like, masturbation kind of, like, briefly in this one, but, you know, I think a lot of it is about her masturbating, so I...
Okay.
Let's see what it says here. This is one of the most subversive modern songs about masturbation because Lady Gaga came up with this song while working with two men, Mark Ronson and Beck. In 2008 interview, she said that the music industry was still misogynistic, even to her. He considered this song a real fuck you.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah.
Green Day, Long View.
Long
yeah.
View.
Yeah, this is a song mostly about a guy being bored, and like he just mentions masturbating once, I think, one of the lyrics.
That's kind of weak compared to the rest of them.
I think it's weak. I think that one is weaker.
And probably because it's a man masturbating, it's, you know, once again, more overlooked than Shebop.
Right. And he just kind of mentions it like just offhand that he's masturbating. So, like, I'll let that in, but I think that's probably one of the weakest ones here.
So, this next one, Maybe I've misinterpreted it all. But then Nikki started to grind. I thought that was screwing, right? Grinding. Yeah. But this is, but it's, was it masturbating? Was Nikki masturbating, I mean, and not grinding on a, on some, on someone? Or maybe she was grinding on something.
She was. The word masturbating was used early in the song. She was masturbating in a with a magazine.
Oh, yep, it's true.
In the hotel lobby, but that's the only time it was exclusively said that she was masturbating. All the other times it said she was grind. So, like, I suppose there could have been mutual masturbation involved, but that's not explicit. But it starts off with her masturbating, and that's a big
to
part
a magazine,
of her personality.
Yeah.
I think it works out for that.
How she said, how would you like to waste some time? I couldn't resist when I saw little Nick grind.
And I assume the grinding there is talking about the masturbating.
Yeah, maybe.
Masturbating.
Yeah.
The masturbating, because, you know, that's what, that's all that had happened by that point.
This is all before Prince became a, before he found a relief. Because
it's an interesting song.
Yeah, I mean, Jehovah's Witnesses probably don't sing this song. You know, come on in. Let's listen to some Jehovah's Witness music. Come on into the house, man. I had this great song I think you should hear by Prince. Yeah, Jehovah's Witness, right? Let's listen.
The only thing I object to really in this song is calling her a sex fiend, which I'm like, hey, the girl loves sex and she likes to get it a lot.
Yeah,
you know, I wouldn't call her a sex fiend. I call her a sex-positive woman.
I mean, is fiend, do you feel that has a negative connotation? Because I don't feel like it's as much slut-shaming as other terms.
Well, you know, you shouldn't masturbate in a hotel lobby. That's one thing that maybe you've gone a little extreme, but...
Well, I mean, that's...
I'm not going to complain.
I'm not. Billy Idol, Dancing With Myself.
I just found out, I was today old when I found out this song was about masturbating. Yeah.
I'm not... Dancing With Myself. I get it now, right, in context, right, with some of the other, you know, Dancing In A Circle, Dancing With Myself, right? I didn't know that.
Same here.
This one's news to me.
But now it makes me appreciate that song a whole lot more.
It certainly does, yeah. Yep. Okay, what's next here? Violent Femmes.
Violent Femmes, Blister In The Sun. Now, this I think is the very weakest one of the songs.
Okay. As far as the masturbation content.
Right.
Okay.
It says, body and beats, I stain my sheets. And that's basically the only part that it mentions. And that could be a reference to masturbating. Could also just be leaking, you know? So, like, no explicit reference to masturbating in here at all. The whole song doesn't appear to be about masturbating. I give this song a 0. It's the lowest one on the list.
Okay. But I think
well,
it's a
good
song.
Well, considering his girlfriend is at the end of the bed crying, what the heck? But is he masturbating or is he having... issues.
I think it's a woman who.
It is. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I know the song. It's a great song. Maybe not for masturbation. Good. Chuck Berry, My Ding-a-Ling. I mean that's right. That isn't straightforward. I don't know what it is, right? Yeah.
We all know My Ding-a-Ling. Basically the poster boy for masturbating.
Yep. They caught me playing with my ding-a-ling. Yep.
My. I didn't know it was this old though.
Yeah. Chuck Berry. Yeah. Elvis Costello and Attraction, Pump It Up. I'm not sure I know this song at all. Elvis Costello has a way of normalizing anything, even nice.
That's right. It's a cool song. Lyrics, out in the fashion show, down in the bargain bin, your passion out under pressure, fall into submission, hidden run, tread, mission, no use wishing now for any other.
Okay.
So pretty coded language about masturbating.
Yeah, but I mean, you get it, right? I mean, it makes sense. I like it. The Darkness. Oh, do you have more? I'm sorry.
No. I was just about to move on.
The Darkness, Holding My Own.
Another song, pretty explicitly about masturbation. Lately, I'm doing what I can to myself. Oh, finding time to focus on my fantasy. I'm satisfied in my own company. Oh, I don't take this matter into my own.
He's got the line, My Ding-a-Ling, right there. It's a callback. Does he know it, though? He must know it, right? That must be intentional. That must be a Chuck Berry callback.
The lyrics, though, that's just a quote from him. That's not even it's just saying the song doesn't have the impact of My Ding-a-Ling.
Oh, it doesn't. Okay. Oh, well, that's too bad. That'd be awesome if it was in the song. If I ever write a song about masturbation, I'll do a callback to Chuck Berry and Shebop.
And, of course, we've covered other songs about masturbating, including Sarah Silverman's Perfect Night.
Her stuff's pretty explicit. You know what she's talking about, right? There's no coded language most of the time with her.
Right. And I mean, like, that song, I guess, isn't specifically about masturbating because she mentions a bunch of other stuff that she's planning to do, have a nice and relaxing night. But the masturbating is mentioned a few times.
I've got one for you. It's Garfunkel and Oates, go-kart racing, accidentally masturbating.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a good one, right? I mean, that deserves to be on that list. I'll tell you what. I mean, that's a great song, number one, hysterical, and very much about masturbation. Even if it was an accident, it was about masturbation.
There's one song that I know that I think is secretly about masturbating, but I haven't looked it up to see. It's actually explicitly said that it's about masturbating or not. I just came across this song somewhere at some point.
Yeah, but I think, I guess this is specifically pop songs, and I'm going to say go-kart racing, accidentally masturbation is definitely a niche genre, right? Because they're comedians.
Right.
They're musical comedians, but I still think that I can make a better top 10 list than. And they're going to be more explicit. And they're definitely, they're not going to be a question about, maybe, right? They're going to be about math.
Well, there's this, this song is called Feel the Rush by Freddie Kalas. And the lyrics go, I got a little secret, don't know if I can keep it. I feel it in my body, and now I want to read.
Nice.
I feel the rush in my body, see me moving, feeling happy, baby, watch me when I'm green. Because every day, every night, I'm on fire. Got this feeling, I want to take it higher.
I found one.
Yeah. What do you find?
I found Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
No, wait.
Is that about masturbating?
Don't keep me hanging on like a yo-yo.
That's not masturbating.
I don't want to miss it when you hit that high.
Is that more about having sex before you go?
That's what I thought. You think that song is about watching somebody masturbate?
I'm going solo. Wake me up before you go.
Right. I'm not planning on going solo. I'm not planning on masturbating. Let's wake me up before you go so we can knock one out again.
Yeah, that's not about masturbating.
Yeah.
Something's bugging me. Something's not right. My best friend told me what you did last night. Left me sleeping in my bed. I was dead.
Well, yeah, but didn't say he was dreaming. You know, he should have been fucking her instead of masturbating. Maybe. Okay.
All right. Well, so possible masturbation reference.
Possible. I'm gonna call it slim. But maybe I'm wrong. You know, what did Wham have to say about it? They probably said nothing. Anyway, we should move on. And so we can
from Freddie Kalas. I want to take it higher. I'm burning. I'm on fire. Now I'm telling you the truth. Since I was a little youth.
All right. Let's move on from masturbating to poop, shall we?
Ooh, let's talk about poop.
All right. So and this kind of all these things kind of string together because it led me in one and another. So the first article I found was this one about the homeopathic doctor who coated his car in dung. And this one was from October of this year. And the idea is that the dung does something magical to keep the car from heat. So you get in, I guess you wouldn't have to use your air conditioner because I imagine it's pretty hot in India. Here in Houston, we just run the air conditioning. We don't put poop on the outside of the car. And not that I think that would do anything anyway, but they had the idea that it did. So it started with this. A woman who coated her car in cow dung claimed that it would keep it cool without AC. So that's kind of where it started. I mean,
if you like cover all the windows and everything, that'll block the sun from coming.
Yeah, I think you might just be making a hot box. I mean, I don't know. and the guy, I guess the doctor said. So you look at the person in the Toyota. They covered it in poop. In cow poop, and it's specifically cow poop. I think that is important here because I think that the cows are already kind of magical for them, and I think that that's why this is the thing. I don't think that you would use any other poop for this because I think you need the properties of the cow, right? I think that there's something magical. I think there's magical thinking going on is what I think.
Okay, but also, even if this is true, if cow poop is the best thing, cooling your car on a hot summer day and making sure the interior is, like, even if it works like a charm, is it worth it?
Well, I don't know, but, I mean, if you don't have to run the air conditioning, I mean, guess maybe. I mean, I imagine that once it dries, there's no smell.
I just got to get out my snow thing to chip off the dried poo on my windshield before we go.
Well, if it rains, you're screwed, right? I imagine that this is not going to hold up very well. I don't know. But they do use cow poop for insulation in some places, is what the article said. And the idea that they translated it from there to the car, but it's not the same. I mean, imagine because if they're using it with something, it's probably mixed with something that's creating an air gap, right? And that's keeping the sun out. Not the cow poop in and of itself. It's a combination of that and straws.
Right. That's the way they used to do like old Waddle and Daub houses in England, right?
Sure. And that will keep heat in and keep heat out, right? I mean, and keep. I mean, yeah. It is a good insulator potentially because the straw has so much air,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's a function of an air gap, not the function of the poop necessarily. The poop would probably be a binder. But yeah, so my third article in this shows a whole bunch of cars that people have done this. It's I don't know how big a thing it is. And even in the end of the article is that there's no reason to write. And it says regardless of its effectiveness, how much negative effect will this cast on the car's body is yet unknown. So if it's doing any damage to the paint and finish, we have no idea. I guess it would depend on is there a lot of ammonia in cow poop? I wonder if there's something in that would affect the finish. Is I guess a potential. Plus, how long will the coat last, and will the car smell? And imagine it probably when it's dried, you might not smell it, but as soon as it rains, I bet you're gonna smell like shit.
Yeah. if the poop gets like into crevices and stuff that you can't easily clean it out.
Well, apparently, in several cultures, cow dung is traditionally used to coat floors and walls in parts of Africa.
And they
do it to get rid of mosquitoes.
Really? So there's something in there. Yeah. I mean, okay, there might be reasons to use it, but what it's not going to do is keep the car cool. It's just not.
Actually, they use it for keep cool and also.
But that's different when you're using it as an insulator, right? You're not using a thin layer of it. How is it used? Is what's
right,
important
right.
here? That's what I'm getting at. If you create an air barrier, right? That's going to create that air gap. You have to have some space in there for it to work. If you take a thin coating on something, how would that make it cooler, right? There's not enough air gap in there for it to do it. But if you have, maybe if it was an inch thick, right, or more, right, so that could really, absorb that and dissipate that heat, maybe, right? But there's just not enough of a coat for it to work. I'm calling bullshit on the car. Not that there isn't a way, right? Because if you were to take dung and straw and mix them together, right, you would create you and use that as a barrier. You have a lot of air in there, right, to dissipate heat. So that would probably work.
And it'd be just as effective as putting your car in the shade.
It might be. Air gap might be more effective. I don't know, but it's something. So I'm not saying you can't use it as an insulator. I'm saying pacing on the car like that is not gonna work. I don't think the physics work.
No, you can't. You definitely can't get much of a benefit just from smearing poop all over your car. And like I said, even if you could, why would you want to?
I don't know. I think that there's a magical thinking here. That's what I think. So.
In India, it is dried into cake-like shapes called upla or kanda and used as replacement for firewood.
Okay, but that's
cooking.
Different. Sure. But even
name.
A brick-like
upla,
shape like
upla
that?
Upla and kanda.
I mean, I don't know what else they might mix into it, but I'm imagining that it's probably pretty airy, the brick, and that's why it would probably work, right? I mean, it's got to do something, and even the brick itself, right, can absorb a certain amount of heat, right? The question is, how much does it store? Because once it gets to a certain temperature, if you're storing heat, it's just going to dissipate that heat somewhere else, right, into the structure. But if it has enough air in there, it could probably dissipate more heat, is what I'm getting at, right? It could work like a heat.
Well, apparently, they produce biogas to generate electricity.
I believe that. I believe that you can use it to make heat. I think burning shit works. No argument there. Even if you're composting with it, you make heat, right? There's a bunch of different ways to make heat from there because I mean poop has carbon in it, right? I mean it's going to be a carbon sink to a certain extent.
And methane.
It might have is it going to be able to hold the methane when it dries? I'm not sure that it can.
It's rich in methane used in rural areas.
But when it dries, does it hold the methane?
And elsewhere to provide renewable and stable. Unsustainable source of
If you can capture that methane, if you do methane capture,
I mean, I'm sure it would run out of I'm sure it would run out at some point. I know you can in septic systems and things like that, harness methane energy from that.
Well, I think mm-hmm. that some cow farms do capture the methane from the poop, right? That's a thing, that they use that. I'm just thinking though that if you were to make a brick out of that methane would escape. In that process, and I don't think that maybe the poop would hold it. I don't know. I'm just trying to imagine. That methane molecule is hard to hold on to. But I don't know. Maybe it does work. Yeah. But Yeah, I believe that there's energy, you know, in a dried poop. You can burn that, I believe. I just don't believe that if you take and smear it on your car that you're going to reduce the heat inside of the car. In fact, I'm wondering if you're going to actually add heat.
Cow dung is a mixture of indigestible plant matter, water, and other substances. The intestine. not a favorite topic of discussion.
No, well, that's not true. For me, it is. Yeah, I mean, we're having yeah. Well, that's not
we're
true.
We're having a great old
yeah.
discussion.
Anyway, I don't know. We can talk about poop later. Let's move on though, because it was the homeopathy thing that the key that led me to the next pieces. Let me do this because I want to talk about. So I found an article from Rite Aid. And, well, it's from writing. I wasn't going to say that at first, but let me just say. So it says, can you take two different homeopathic remedies at once? Taking different homeopathic remedies, it says, if you're doing that, you need to read this. And basically, it goes in to explain why you can do that. It also, interesting, says there that homeopathy is a supplemental. So you use it as a supplemental to all the other actual medicine you're doing. And it says that if you do it quickly, it may reduce. It says that, you know, the regular stuff you're doing can do 80%, and this might do 20%. And this is on Rite Aid, okay? Rite Aid is the seventh biggest pharmacy chain in the U.S., and they're promoting this crap, right? I mean, this article is promoting homeopathy. I don't think there's any way to get around that. And the question is, if I go in and ask a pharmacist about this crap, about this specific question, what's the pharmacist going to tell me? And they're probably not going to say, yeah, skip the homeopathy, because it sells and there's a lot of money, right? If you can sell water, right, is what they're doing at a premium. And this article is not old. This article is from last September 27th, 2023 is when this was published, which got me thinking, what about CVS? And of course, CVS... has a whole section on homeopathics. It says most homeopathic remedies are sold over the counter for use to treat allergies, common cold, and headache, and yada yada yada. So there's their promotion of the crap. They're still on the.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think in Canada our regulations are a little more are a little less lax than your guys, but even here, like at like Shoppers Drug Mart, they sell like homeopathy alongside real medicine.
So
well,
I thought,
also they've been fighting for them not to be selling a lot of homeopathic things, of finding that they're actually enough, that many of them say they have something and they don't.
I think that's true in Canada. I don't think that's so true in the U.S. And that's from like past readings. I don't know what's actually going on in Canada. It would be interesting to know here. We'll get to some of that, but.
I think you're talking, Madcap, more about the like holistic medicine industry as a whole. Homeopathic remedies actually are supposed to not have like a molecule of whatever substance it is in it.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about that as before, but we can do that. But I chose CVS first because they're the largest pharmacy. Next is Walgreens, second largest pharmacy, and they have right on their website, homeopathy has a long history since the time of. Hippocrates. People have been using homeopathic remedies as a natural approach to healing. And blah, 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 blah. And I went, and my head exploded right there because I went, that's not true. Homeopathy is only about 200 years old. Maybe a little older now. 250. Hippocrates, am I saying it wrong, lived in 1460 BC to 1375 BC. So I don't actually know how that works out because there was some chin stuff. Whatever. Homeopathy
and
was...
You know, like the folk remedy cures for like that they thought were medicine for curing things back in like the olden days was stuff like, you know, like...
Lead.
Bleed a chicken until it's dead and then hide its blood
under
a rock. Under the full moon or something like that.
And burn it the next.
Yeah.
Yeah. But homeopathy was conceived of in 1765 by Samuel Hahnemann. And basically, and they talk about how, you know, the idea of like cures like and this and that. And, you know, they basically say that you take a small substance of what causes an illness and that you can use it to, you know, to treat it. And it'll get your body started to, you know, yeah, yada, yada, yada. That's all on the Walgreens side. The Walgreens side is really deep. And, of course, it isn't even that. So, like, if you have watery eyes, the cure for that is they take onion. And they juice it, and they take, you know, 100 drops or 10 drops to 1 drop, and then you succuss it, right? You got to beat it against your leather Bible. And then you take a drop of that and put it into another 99 drops of water, and you do that, and you do that, to the point where there's nothing left, right? And in fact, at the dilutions that they claim that they're getting to are more than their atoms in the universe.
Right, and they claim that the more you dilute it, the more powerful
it is. Exactly, right? Yeah, the more you succuss it, the more powerful it is. So why wouldn't you just then succuss everything to its maximum, right? But the problem is that there's not enough water on the earth to one of these. There's just not, when you start adding up the quantity. But then, you know, so once they have this, right, then they'll take, you know, they can either, I guess you could get it as a liquid, but a lot of times they're dropped onto a lactose, like sugar cube, and you take it that way. But yeah, so, and it even says, I'll write on the Walmart thing, like cures like. Well, that's never been true. Like has never cured like, right? Because strep.
It is kind of an old concept. Not that like cures like, but that things that are like one another would be related and might cure things. Like I know, like if a plant looks like a certain thing, like a certain body part, it said, oh, that plant is good for that body part. So it's kind of an old kind of theory that's just, you know, given a new spin here.
Yeah, but every flower looks like a labia.
That's why they're all good for those.
Oh yeah, fair enough. Yeah, but it's a ridiculous concept. It doesn't work, and RFDA here in the U.S. has given them a huge pass, right? And I put in here the 15 largest pharmacies in the U.S. because that, you know, that's where I was getting my data. And the next one it's important is to note that Walmart is number 5, right? CVS is number 1. And for the next article, and those are in the U.S. Worldwide, those numbers might change because CVS might be worldwide. Do you have CVS in Canada?
I believe we do.
Yeah. So do you have Walgreens?
No, I think Walgreens taken out last.
Okay,
like
so
that.
You used to. So was so, it?
I didn't know that we got rid of Walgreens.
Okay, so you might have it somewhere. So Walgreens also might be worldwide, but this next one, the Cigna Express Scripts, and they've actually been purchased. You probably wouldn't have up there. I think that's pretty much U.S. owned, but they're number 3.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Center for Inquiry has sued Walmart and CVS in the District of Columbia. So we're only talking about 3 stores, and basically saying that by putting homeopathy on the same shelves as real medicine, that you're confusing customers. And that these two shouldn't be in the same place, and that there's laws in Washington D.C., the District of Columbia, that say that you can't do that, and they also make reference to some other. The FDA has made some, basically you can lie to your customers as long as you tell them you're lying, types of you know, bullshit as far as labeling is concerned. So basically, yeah, you tell them, hey, this is good for your headaches, and small print saying, you know, this has never been shown to do right. I guess types of, so you lie to them in the big print, and you tell the truth in the fine print somehow. I don't know if it's exactly that, but that's the idea that came. So yeah, so they're suing, and in the first round, they I think that they lost, but they appealed it, and the appeals court said, because they lost on standing, not on whether it was true or not, they said that basically that the Center for Inquiry didn't have standing. And basically, the Center for Inquiry says that, listen, we're protecting all consumers with this. So, and they're saying that they have standing because they're trying to protect. And the appellate court found that compelling, and so sent it back. And so I don't know where it stands right now as far as trial dates and stuff like that. But so because if you lose on standing, whether you're true or not, in the U.S., you're done. So they had to appeal that first, or you have to go out and find somebody who's been harmed by it in that district. You know,
I just found out that I was lying. Still have Walgreens.
Okay.
So, sorry.
So, nope. You know what? We're going to let it pass, but we're going to dock your.
Oh man.
So anyway, but the last article that I have from the Center of Inquiry, and I know I'm covering these, we've got other stuff. They did a survey. And in that survey, they asked people, you know, about homeopathy, and then they told them what it was and asked them if after the hearing, all that, would still buy them. And I guess 2 out of 5 customer surveys were negative phrases, bad, terrible, and ripoff and scam. And that basically 4 out of 5 people after hearing what it actually purchased. So if they were being upfront about what it actually was, right, and posting, you know, what actually was going on with it, people probably wouldn't buy it because they would realize that there's nothing in it. Right. And if you tell somebody there's nothing in it and then try to sell it, you know, sell them a box of sleeping $30, $5 that are absolutely worthless. So, yeah. Pretty interesting. I don't know where the suit's actually going to go because, you know, getting a hearing on standing is going to be much quicker than the actual, than actually taking it to court. So I don't know where it stands. And the only court filing I could find right off the bat was the appellate court filing. I didn't find the previous filing. And so I don't know where it currently stands. And there was nothing that I found on CFI's website. Science Based Medicine, that I also posted an article from, they didn't have an update at this time either. So I found the appellate stuff, you know, I found that filing, but no updates from, and that appellate filing was just last year. So it could be that they're still prepping to take this to court, right? Pretty interesting, and it'll be interesting to see if they can actually succeed. I'm skeptical that they can actually get, Walmart, and CVS to take these things off the shelf and put them into a wall of shame. I think they've got some good points, and I think that they're correct. I just don't know if it's the best kind of right. Is it going to be leaked? I don't know. But at least
technically correct is the best kind of correct.
Well, fair enough. But for this to be the best kind of correct, they've got to be able to get it through the legal system and actually get some action. And of course, if they're doing it on a small desk, probably as a test. If it works here, then you can start attacking it other places because now you've got precedent. They've got to set precedent for the suit first. So we'll see where they go with it.
Around and around they go.
So I think, Dumbass, we should do your stuff because yours runs right into this, and then we'll let Mad Cat go.
Right, yeah. It's a lot of the stuff that you've just talked about. Basically, this is an article covering the alternative health industry, wellness gurus and stuff. And it's kind of asking whether, like, a lot of this is being driven, in general pseudoscientific thinking is being driven by wellness gurus, especially if we're talking about during COVID times. This article was written in 2020, and he says here that the wellness industry is estimated at $4.5 trillion globally. I looked it up currently as of 2023. It is $4.7 trillion. I don't know what the growth rate was before that, though. I didn't look up any trends in debt to see if it's been increasingly or not.
Is that globally, that 4.7 billion?
Trillion, yes.
Trillion. Okay, sorry, trillion. I heard billion. Trillion makes way more sense, because if it was billion, I'm like, that seems even for the U.S.
No, it's 4.7 trillion.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Dollars right now.
I mean, that's insane.
Right. So, like, basically, the popularity of these kind of products is increasing. And a lot of that, I think, probably does have to do with COVID and people's fears about the medical system. And
I saw Gwyneth Paltrow's name down there.
Right, yes. It talks here about Gwyneth Paltrow and her Goop. Apparently, yeah, we were talking about how the U.S. is particularly lax. The Goop had some trouble in Canada and the U.S. for making health claims that it couldn't back up, whereas it didn't need to do that which is like just basic stuff, stuff that can be easy to get around. You know, we still got an alternative health industry here in Canada, but, you know, just those basic things that people are politically unwilling to do in order to get some kind of basic protection in there and not let people do just anything they want.
I mean, this example that they give from Goop, in a 2015 article, Goop published an article which quoted debunked research that claimed that bras can restrict lymph nodes around the breast, even suggesting that wearing them can lead to breast cancer. The article was released during Breast Cancer Awareness Month and was rightly blasted by critics as a scaremongering tactic.
Can you imagine? I mean, like, now all of a sudden you're afraid of these bras you've been wearing for, like, all your life, and you're thinking, oh my God, have I been harming myself from, like, wearing these? That's a very disconcerting thought.
Yeah. And then the next line is, which brings us to vaginal steaming.
Yes.
We've talked about that, right? Yeah. Steaming pile of crap. You'd be better off putting it on the pasting it on your car. So there's a lot of money. I mean, in Gwyneth Paltrow, is slippery in interviews, right? If you see her, because she, some stuff she just laughs off and like, yeah, yeah, you know, yeah, that, yada, yada, yada. And other stuff I think that she really gets, but you can't get her in an interview, right? She's slippery, you know, she just laughs it off, you know, and the people she's talking to, it's not their job to pin her down, right? Because, you know, I don't expect, who am I thinking, who tried to pin her down. There's a particular interview that I'm thinking of, but, I mean, it's just, she just kind of dodged, right? I wonder if it was a Jon Stewart interview. But anyway, I mean, and it's not their job to take him to task for this stuff, right? It's the media's job to call him out on this. But, I mean, unfortunately, when you do, I think you also bring people to the site, and I think it might also actually just be good for them, right? They probably said, but
I mean,
when
a lot of people will say, no publicity is bad publicity.
Right. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, if you talk about how bad vaginal steaming, it probably brings people to the Goop site and they sell more jade eggs. You know, I mean, what else are you going to shove up there?
And there's some talk about here on Wiser.
Sorry.
Right. Wasp nest. Yeah. Right. That was a bad one, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Ken.
There's some talk about why certain people might be more prone to these kind of things, especially like they talk about women and who are often underserved by the medical community. Often, like, their pain is ignored. And I've had friends who gone through this very thing and have poor trust of doctors for these kinds of reasons.
Come and have a bath.
Yeah.
There's a thing that has been said to wing doctors. Go home.
So there's a another. So down here lower, it says in 2018, and I don't know who she is. Is not Ben Goldacre. Whoever she. She reviewed all 161 of Goop Wellness products for pseudoscience. According to Gunter's methodology, products were considered pseudoscience if there was no scientific efficacy advisements against the product. It's a product they are a class of products. So if there's no efficacy for it, she called it pseudoscience. If this hypothesis was biologically or non-existent, I'd have to sleep. But basically, the end result is she reviewed 161 articles to see if they were pseudoscience, and 90% of them could not be backed up. And I'll bet you the other 10% were surveys.
Survey says
it was survey research, right? That made a correlation with no causation. That's my commentary, and I have nothing to back it up. So yeah, interesting.
Right. Yeah.
I need to. Unfortunately, you put this up after I was it got late, so I didn't get a chance to review. I like them. These people have got to go. But I mean, there's so much money in, and the U.S. government does nothing. They give people, because if you classify it. Remember when if you classify it as a supplement, it gives you this huge gap.
I think you don't even have to prove that it doesn't cause harm
nothing.
Or anything.
And what you can't do is make specific claims, right?
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of language that they use to get around so that they aren't making a direct claim because people who have made direct claims, because like the one I can think of offhand is the pomegranate juice, the Palm One, right? They got slapped hard. Probably not hard
enough. But you can say, you know, this has been historically used for this thing. Ho-wink.
Right. And so, like Cheerios, every box of Cheerios says that Cheerios was found in you know, some study to lower your cholesterol. It's probably complete garbage, that whatever study they're pointing to, because I'm pretty sure I've seen a review of that research, and it's not very good. But because one study showed that, they can put that on their fucking box. No matter how weak that study was. So
yeah.
We're not protecting
I think 4 out of
consumers.
5 dentists still recommend, which one is it, Crest?
I don't know. Is that true? And you know, at this point, you know, I mean, I'm not sure that it really matters what toothpaste you use. It's how you use the toothbrush.
Pretty much.
I mean, my dentist, she has samples and stuff, but she's never said, use this toothpaste. She just wants to make sure that I'm using an electric toothbrush and that I'm using it correctly. And it doesn't even need to be electric if you're really good at brushing your teeth. So I use the electric. I'll take the extra help. Thank you. Anything else in here that you found of interest that should be brought up?
I think we pretty much covered everything, especially with the stuff that you've been talking about. We covered a lot of this already.
We covered a lot of it. But I will say that they do quote Ben Goldacre in here, and his book is pretty fabulous, debunking garbage. He's a doctor.
Right, he wrote He wrote Bad Pharma and Bad Science. Yep. Are there any newer books that he wrote?
Those are the ones that I'm aware of as well. Go read them. They're great. All right. We're not enough health stuff. Let's talk about killing animals.
Oh yeah.
Yay!
Just that happens all the time. Which is true. Animals are killed. But
death to the animals.
They taste good.
It's us versus them. They'd kill us if they could.
Well, Brian found all about the Holy Thursday Massacre. I saw all the stuff that was going on when it happened and everything that was in the boa constrictor exotics.
So let me tell you what I think I know.
What do you know?
Okay, the article is like, oh my God, why Florida man's pet boa is accidentally killed in slaughter of pythons. Now, here's the thing, that in the Everglades, Burmese pythons are a huge problem. They also have made reticulated pythons illegal, but I don't know that has a reticulated python actually been shown to be reproducing in the Everglades? I don't know that that's true. And the reason, and I think it was Clint from Clint's Reptiles that it brought that up as that they do not have a reproducing population. Not that you shouldn't kill them right before they do, but at this point they aren't. But the Burmese pythons do have a reproducing population.
So now why are we only focusing on snakes that have been reticulated and then like had their reticulation grown back?
Reticulated. Oh God, I was behind the joke. the Burmese python. But I don't know if there's other pythons or not. And of course, boas are typically a much smaller snake. That's not true. The heaviest snake in the world is, of course, the green-headed anaconda. But they are not reproducing in the Everglades, as far as I know. But I imagine that there's a list of species you cannot have in Florida. And this person that owned the snake is a breeder and had lots of them. And I think a lot of them were Burmese. He had and reticulated python. He thought he was going to, I guess, be grandfathered in on something, and he wasn't. So he had to get rid of the snakes, and he was given a certain amount of time, but not really enough time, by my reading of the article, to get rid of as many snakes as required. And I understand that they might want to come in and check his facilities to make sure that, you know, that he's housing them accordingly so that they can't escape, right? That makes a lot of sense to me. But what happened was that they showed up and he was over his deadline, did they offer to kill the snakes, or it says here that he asked them to, or did they demand to? And I'm not clear on that.
They asked him to, from what I've gathered or what I've seen, basically. It seems that they asked him to, and he showed them the correct way that you euthanize, because he had been threatened with, well, of course, it is considered a criminal act to still have these animals after he'd been cited to get rid of them.
And he did try. He got rid of a lot.
He got rid of more than 80% of his animals, and he requested more time. But they said you only have the 5 months, and he kept on trying to find information, try to get someone to talk to from the FWC, and he even taped talking to them, and you know they weren't cooperating from what shows on his side, and they killed all the snakes, including the one snake, the boa, which is legal. However, the thing is too is that when they put down these laws. These laws were put in after some people had these animals. They said, you just have to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And he had been hoping that a certain amount that they would grandfather in, because they do that at times. And working on that, it was still a long wait. And so when they came in, he put down the first one, and he couldn't handle it. I mean, these are his snakes that he bred and raised from being a little itty-bitty snake, right? And he just couldn't do it. So they went and did it, and they killed all of them. The boa, which was pregnant with
32 babies.
32 babies.
And he says that those babies were worth $3,500, which is so. This is not a BCI, right? This is not a common boa. Type of boa that he's
right. He had been breeding a het.
It was a morph of some sort.
A morph of some
okay,
sort.
Sure.
Yes, and she was worth an awful lot of money. Put her down. Plus, they were not killing properly, etc.
Yeah, it sounds like they left a bloodbath.
They left a bloodbath. I have seen.
You watched the video? I did not. I couldn't watch it. I guess I could. I just chose not to.
I did because I felt if I was going to be able to say anything on my streams or on someone else's stream about it, I have to know what it looked like.
Sure.
So it wasn't nice, but I watched the videos about it.
So is this picture of, I see a BCI, a common boa, and I see some sort of morph in this picture down below. Are those the snakes? Are those the boas?
Which one are you talking about? The one the guy is holding on?
No.
To?
No. The one he's holding on to looks like some sort of a Burmese
python.
Yeah. Some sort of morph of a
Big Shirl was the one he killed. They killed by mistake. The Burmese. But
and those, you know, I think that they had a right to, whether we like it or not, yes. Right? They were in
whether
the right
they,
to do so.
They were.
So it says that they used a bolt gun, right? That they were supposed to put a lethal blow to the snake.
Right, and you're supposed to do some ramble somehow.
Well, the bolt would. The bolt is it. Oh, and then I guess once it after the bolt goes in, then you take something and you scrape it that you didn't just lobotomize them alive.
Because if you just put the bolt still alive for.
Sure, that makes sense.
And, I mean, just like if we have our head cut off, we are alive for, takes a few
for the brain
system
to shut
to
down.
Go, hey, wait.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were, it was very bloody. It was, but you can expect there being blood, but, they slaughtered all of them. And even the one that wasn't supposed to be slaughtered.
And did he have other snakes that they didn't slaughter? There's no way that they slaughtered everyone. I mean,
They slaughtered 35 snakes, or killed, slaughter, kill, whichever way you want to say it. But I believe all the rest were given away or sold.
Right.
And he was having.
Did he only have one boa? Was this all of his snakes left. And one boa?
I was kind of wondering that too. Like,
I'm surprised. Number two. Go ahead.
Like, maybe there was more than one boa, and like he saw that they destroyed her too late. Like, no, not those ones.
No, it was maybe just that. The one boa. I think what he was doing, or may have been doing, I do not know the exacts of, but he may have been doing a co-program with someone else. Someone else would have had the male.
Okay.
He had the female, and then they'd share the profits from the baby.
The only good thing here, from a legal standpoint, is that they've already admitted fault.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what would there be a repercussion? Well, I know, but for killing that boa that they weren't supposed to, what were the repercussions?
Yep. I don't know. They're still fighting on it. Florida U.S. ARC is still fighting about it and fighting to get them to change their policy because for the last at least 3 years, it's been Florida has had a difficulty for the people who have exotic pets because they're getting rid of a lot of animals there and then saying, okay, we can put that under a grandfather clause, but they'd have the clause set up so tight that there's no way you could make enclosures good enough for the animal, which they were saying.
Well, I mean, the problem is that even a snake that's grandfathered in can get loose, right? That's the problem with that.
Any animal can get loose.
Sure, but even in Houston, I'm not as far south, I think, as Florida. If a large snake like that were to get loose here, it's probably going to die in our winter, right? We're gonna have some cold snap that's going to take it out, most likely.
Yeah.
We get cold.
If it gets up here, it's dead.
Exactly, right? But in Florida, they have a thriving population.
Of the one type of snake.
Burmese.
Yeah.
A Burmese python.
Burmese.
And there could be other, I think that they pretty much, all of the mammals in the Everglades, right? I mean, they're pretty much wiped out, aren't they?
I do not know. They say it is really bad. And there's a lot of animals they're killing and showing that it's okay to treat these animals badly. There's been a lot of videos of people hurting, abusing from the list.
Well, these roundups that they're doing, right, in the Everglades, you know, and giving prizes seem a little brutal to me, right? Because you don't know how humanely people are when they're out killing these snakes. They don't, and it doesn't matter, right? I don't think there's no
care.
Laws about how they're supposed to do that. It's just kill as many snakes as you can.
Yeah, and it's the same with the green iguana, any iguana.
The
smaller ones.
Yeah, there are certain iguanas. I mean, green iguanas are nasty. They're nasty critters.
Oh, yeah, they're right nasty, and they can get pretty darn big, too.
They get really big. We owned green iguanas at one point. We never had a good relationship with them, and we rescued one. It was awful.
Yeah, my brother had one, and I never got to see. I was out here in Alberta, and the dogs didn't bother that animal.
No, I didn't realize how many people. Yeah, I didn't realize how many people have lost their finger to green iguanas. An animal that pretty much eats lettuce can take your finger off. Incredible.
Oh yeah, I mean even little Sam, when he gets grumpy and gets his mouth open and going, ah, it's like, holy shoot, you are an intimidating little creature.
I mean, I've been bit by an iguana. It doesn't feel nice.
Yeah, no. Actually, what's worse than a green iguana for getting bit is the tokay.
The tokay gecko?
Oh, yeah.
Are they?
They're nasty. And they hold on.
Yep.
It's funny.
So you have some other stuff in here. We're already in an hour and a half.
Okay.
So what else you want to cover here? Pick one more.
One more. Ohio police officer shoots a dog dead in a viral video, sparking fury. This dog, they had out golden Labradors, it looked like. Labradors or retrievers here.
Is it going to play as soon as I click on
people
it?
Had, yeah, you can watch it if you like. I didn't get to hear what was said.
Okay.
But there were like three or four goldens out there. And we know how vicious goldens are not normally vicious. But this guy had his gun out right away. And the dog's just playing. The dog runs towards them and runs back. And
oh, yeah, that dog looks. That dog does not look. Okay.
It does not look furious at all. And the dog was running away from him when he shot it.
It did run at him.
It did run at him, but it was just being playful. This person didn't know anything about animals whatsoever.
Yeah, that dog was probably not. Yeah, but you know, a big animal like that runs. Yeah,
that's a tough call. Get the dog away from me, Golden Lab.
Yeah. But yeah,
and
I mean, shooting
the
at the
dog's
yeah,
running
the,
away from him.
Yeah,
it's not even at him,
but,
and she comes out, gives him trouble.
Okay, but I don't know where they are, and I don't know what the leash laws are. But those dogs probably should have been on leashes out front. I'm sorry.
That is true.
So the owner is partly responsible here, whether or not that dog was going to attack because they weren't following the law.
True enough.
You don't want the cop shooting the dog. You know, that's just playing, but. But at the same time, there's leash laws for a reason, right? Because that dog ran directly at him and spooked him, right? And so he shot. Why he had his gun out in the first place, I don't know. But he shot because that dog spooked, right?
Yep. But once again, it was after the dog.
It's hard. I don't want to defend the cop too much, but I also want to say that you know, owners of these animals have you know, they have duties that they need to uphold too, and
that
oftentimes they don't want to keep their dogs on leashes, and I find that to be
that is true. There are people who have been very badly damaged by dogs that are not kept on.
Yep.
I remember one time walking home at night, and it was like dark, and I wasn't even able to see the dog, but it looked and sounded big. Like barked at me, growled at me, like right in the driveway as I'm walking by on the sidewalk, and like moving towards me, I like screamed and jumped off to the road, and I could hear the owner inside, you know, yelling the dog's name, telling him to stop. And the dog didn't chase me or anything, but it was like that dog was aggressive and just loose on the driveway.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I had a little Doberman thing one chase me, or not chase, and I had a large backpack, and I almost dropped it. You know, mm-hmm. Little dogs like that.
Even little dogs can do damage with
you. Yeah, if I'm out walking and your little dog comes terrorizing me, it's getting punted.
Yeah. My friend's daughter, not too long ago, she was in her yard, just in her yard, and let their dog out, and the dog went straight to her, doing nothing. Went straight to her and mauled her.
Yeah. So
and she was lucky not to have gotten it on.
So all of that said, should that a cop shot that dog? I don't know. That dog should have been on a leash.
I don't. The dog should have been on. So. But one saving favor. I just want to do this one little
Go ahead.
Just for the fun of it. Little hero cat saves the dog during a vicious attack. Another dog attacked this little dog, and their cat came along and beat up the other dog.
Okay, so, that's
good. I mean, yeah, it's very opposite of the depictions usually of cats and dogs, because when you think about it, cats are the ones who always come ahead in confrontation with dogs. Dogs are never chasing down and catching cats. Cats are like way more agile. They'll jump all over the face. They'll scratch you all over your face. The dog's just got his bite. He's not going to be able to hold up at all.
Well, you know,
not a little dog.
We've been feeding the local strays because we had a cat get pregnant.
Catch and release.
Yeah, but here's the problem. But there's a problem with this. It's not so simple. So the cats were, she actually had them in the fence because the my neighbor and I have slats on both sides, so she was in there with the cats, and I started seeing them, and then she brought them out, and so we're like, okay, we gotta do something. So we started feeding them, you know, to try and get them socialized so that we can catch them. And so of course the mom still pretty leery of, but not like she used to be. And the juvenile cats are, I mean, one of them practically, it's very socialized. The kids will go out and he'll come sit with him, and the other one, his sister, will sit under your chair at your, and it'll come over too. Mom, not so much. And now there's a new set of kittens, right? They've got more because we're having trouble finding a place that we can take the cat to get it taken care of. We think that we finally have some stuff in place now. Yeah. So I think it's going to cost me $80 to do the mail, but we're going to take the juvenile because we can catch him fairly simply. We're going to take him in, get him new. So that's going to cost me $80. And I think that the mother's going to be the tough one, right? Because she's aggressive. She'll hiss at us and stuff like that. But not as much anymore. Now we're the new kittens and stuff like that. She's been way less likely to we'll get close to them. She kind of just watches us, right?
Yep.
And in fact, sometimes it's like, you know, just get them away from me. Right?
<Yeah. laughs>
You go play with the kittens. I'm out of here. And so we can get close to these new kittens, a lot closer than we could to the previous kitten. And so we've got to catch all of these and get them. We're starting to get stuff arranged, but man, we need to do it before there's another round of kittens. And there's no place to take kittens. Nobody wants kittens. So.
Yeah, there are certain areas that don't take the kittens. Plus, the other thing is too is if you take the cat somewhere else, then you're just going to get more other cats coming.
Well, I want to get it fixed and let them go again, right?
But you still can't find a place at house.
I think we found a place that'll take this. I think we've got arrangements for two of them. But that's still what?
Has your daughter looked a boat for you too?
She tried, but I think it was my wife that has somebody at work that does this kind of thing and has found some place to help us out. So she's gonna come get the mother, and then we'll take care of the kittens. The approach. We can't approach mom. So we've got a cage out there, right? That we've been letting, you know. So you know. And we'll start putting food in it. So I think that we'll be able to catch mom and, you know, whoever else is.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a Connie at, or feral. And
these are feral cats.
Her mom, yeah, she was feral. And her mom, they called gloves the way you could get your gloves.
We have Kevlar gloves for this purpose, right? We have gloves for them.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we should say on that disappointment, say goodnight.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
And what,
that's another kitty in the can.
Another kitty in the can.
Cat kicking the dog in the can.
If you've made it this far, that's an hour of your time you're never getting back. But the Amateur Skeptics appreciate you giving that hour to us. If you'd like to tell us how you felt about spending that hour with us, let us know at WTF@amateurskeptics.com. The Amateur Skeptics podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Share Alike No Derivatives 3.5 license. Intro music by Peter Canold. Find more of Peter's music at soundcloud.com/PKANOL. Exit music by OFM. Find more of their music at myspace.com/OFMHQ. Artwork for the Amateur Skeptics by Sean Smith Ford. Copyright Shadow Knight Digital Portraiture.